Dear friends, I've been for a week now working on the sharing with you about the Nyaswami Order, and we were actually literally halfway through the Pilgrim's Vow of Intention yesterday. And then after the broadcast was over, I was talking to some of the friends who were here, and I was just talking about the gradual opening up of California, where I live, after this period of lockdown, and I was expressing extremely emphatic opinions, and I heard myself. And then later I got input from other places, including from Dr. Peter Van Houten, who has been the medical doctor who's been guiding Ananda overall from Ananda Village, where he lives. Just the whole cycle of shifting that we're in now. So I've decided to take another brief departure from the subject at hand and address some of the thoughts that were occurring to me yesterday, because it's quite possible that they'll also be relevant to what you're going through. And what I've chosen to call this subject today is waiting to be rescued. And waiting to be rescued is another one of those concepts that over time, at least for me, and I hope for you, has come to be a very important part of my thinking in terms of being able to gauge subtle aberrations in my energy. And I realize that we have been in this difficult position since the middle of March. It started earlier than that. I am part of our school here, our local school here. We have a high school and a primary school, elementary school, and the elementary school every year does a huge theater production, and it's a key part of our spring curriculum, and my hobby is making organizing the costumes, doing theater with the children. So every year I help them. So in March is the time that we were doing it, and we were working and working on this at the same time that the pandemic was closing in on us. And, you know, one thing after another was closing, and we were sort of pushing for this performance with our 80 children, you know, just constantly not having any idea whether we'd ever get to the performance, because we would have 250 people crammed into our temple just for every reason. We got to the first dress rehearsal, and I began to get laryngitis on that day. And we went through the dress rehearsal, and then as soon as I really realized I was losing my voice, in 20 minutes I was out of the building. I just was gone. I spent 48 hours in a panic, because taking my temperature about every 15 minutes for most of the time when I was awake. And concerned that I had actually contracted the virus, and I was in intimate contact with all 80 children. And I was terrified. It really, and that was the beginning of my taking this seriously. It's not that I wasn't, but the sudden realization that I might be personally responsible for infecting all those children and all their families, it sobered me, let me put it that way. And so I got very serious and have been very serious about that. And that weekend, the county closed all the schools in the county, which we knew it was coming. So the children left on Friday thinking they were coming back for a performance week. We knew there wasn't much chance of it. And then, you know, it just vaporized. And we went online like all other schools and so on. And so I've been pretty faithful and without resistance to anything that's been asked of us, because I experienced in my heart the possibility that my carelessness or my kind of laissez-faire attitude could have catastrophic influence on many, many people. And also, I mean, just on another level, it could have just destroyed our school if a key staff member got sick. People are not rational, especially where their children are concerned, with good cause. I'd felt, and we'd all felt, that we were behaving appropriately up to that point. Now, I've been through all of this, and I've been under very strict quarantine. I'll be 73 in a couple of weeks, and I have very good health. I'm stronger than a lot of people who are a lot younger than me, but I'm technically in the vulnerable population, plus because of the broadcasts I'm doing, plus because of the house I live in, which is a central recording studio, not only for me, but for others. And there's a small team, is the way we've handled it. Everyone in the community, of course, is being careful, but we're not a closed community like Ananda Village. We can't really draw a border around ourselves, because many people who live here have complicated and continuous interactions. But those of us who work only for the Sangha, we've been very, very sequestered. This house has been very quarantined, which is why we can sit comfortably without masks and so on, because we are very quarantined, really. Now, however, things are beginning to lighten up. And so yesterday I heard myself, you know, it's very confusing because there is a tremendous amount of information and it contradicts itself. And then behind it, you have conspiracy theories, and behind it, you have nobody's any damn good anyway, and they're all out for themselves. So you're just never quite sure. You're not really talking to someone whose character you know. One of the wonderful things about community is you know people. You really know them. You know their lives. You've seen them in good times and bad, and you know the character of the people you're working with. But we're guessing at the character of public figures. You know, you just don't know. And there's just been so much yes, no, no, yes. But I watched myself, reason follows feeling. I just watched myself wanting this to be over. And that was what I finally began to tune into, is the fact that difficult things happen in the world. And they don't always end conveniently when we want them to end. And often they end worse because we allow feeling to dominate reason or desire to completely inhibit every other faculty of discrimination. For the entire time that I've been part of Ananda, which is since 1969, Swami Kriyananda has continually repeated to us Paramahansa Yogananda's strong predictions that this world will need to go through some very serious changes. I just listened again this morning to a call to action that Jyotish and Devi, the worldwide leaders of Ananda, issued on June 5th. It's excellent. I really encourage you to go to ananda.org and just call to action by Jyotish and Devi. It's very easy to find. They're very measured. They're very calm in the way they describe things, and they're very clear and powerful. You know, this is not what we are watching, whether we have a respite in this or whether it's one continuous cycle from here on. I was thinking this morning, it's like when children are in the room and they're supposed to be sleeping and the mother hears the kids playing and the mother will say at the door of the room, "Don't make me come in there. You know, you better behave or I'm going to come in." And the children will, you know, immediately, the mere threat of mommy's discipline will cause them to do the right thing. Well, Divine Mother's been saying to us for a long time, "Don't make me get involved in this." But we haven't listened. We've destroyed the planet. We've become exceedingly greedy in countless ways. We've totally disregarded the idea that we're part of a greater reality. Nowadays, you know, just unforgivable prejudice and abuse of power for nothing more important than the color of a person's skin has really begun to be exposed. And it's unfortunately, or fortunately, I would call it fortunately, Divine Mother has come into the room. Master says something, and he's come into the room with a promise that Paramahansa Yogananda made in Autobiography of a Yogi, one of the most influential spiritual books in the world, on page 291. I've quoted from this before, and I couldn't find the reference for reasons that are too silly to explain, but someone found it for me. Let's see. It says, "Babaji, the Maha Avatar, is in constant communion with Christ. Together they send out vibrations of redemption and have planned the spiritual technique of salvation for this age. The work of these two fully illumined masters, one with the body and one without it, is to inspire the nations to forsake suicidal wars, race hatreds, religious sectarianism, and the boomerang evils of materialism. Babaji is well aware of the trend of modern times, especially of the influence and complexities of Western civilization, and realizes the necessity of spreading the self liberations of yoga equally in the West and in the East." Now, Babaji and Jesus are not the only great masters working on this problem of humanity on planet Earth, but they are two of them. This book was published in 1946. okay? Just at the end of World War II, in that century already, World War I, the Korean War, the Second World War, then after that, the Korean War came after. After that came the Vietnam War. We've been at war in Iraq. You know, race, hatred, religious, sectarian, suicidal wars. We watch the whole planet gearing up again, you know, making each other enemies so that we can do the whole darn thing again. You know, Divine Mother has come into the room and she's getting our attention. And if we imagine that, oh, the pandemic is just going to go away, we're going to get a vaccine, we're not really thinking clearly. And Dr. Peter said something also that was extremely interesting yesterday, which he said, often the aftermath of some catastrophic event is even more difficult than the event itself, because everything has been disrupted. We don't have even any idea where we're going after this. You know, one of my friends said, oh, if it's time to buy a used car, Hertz has just gone bankrupt. I mean, how many Hertz has gone bankrupt? Of course, in my childhood, Hertz was a big auto rental company. You would just think of it as always being there. Oh, it's gone bankrupt. You know, this company is closing their stores. This company is closing theirs. You know, there's protections in place at the moment, but the aftermath, when all of that wears out, plus, and this is something I've also read to you earlier here, he says, the vibrations of, how he puts it first here, let me just say, this was an article in 1935. No one can get away with disturbing one part of the world without the disturbance moving through the ether waves to other parts of the world. If people in one part of the house are disturbed, then the entire household is bound to be disturbed. And he wrote this in 1936. And he talks about, he says here, in the present, 1936, here it is in one place. The last world war, which was World War I, created wrong vibrations in Europe first, which then spread all over the earth, and where there was no war, influenza appeared. The agonies of the people who died in the war created the subtle cause of the epidemic of Spanish influenza, which immediately followed the war and killed 20 million people, while the war itself killed only about 10. And then he speaks of the Spanish Civil War and the death struggles of men, women, and children are causing floods in America, storms in England and Portugal, and earthquakes in India. So all he's saying there is that we're interconnected. And whether this pandemic started from a laboratory in China or from a jumped from animal to human, it was the result of, you see, the things that happen are the result of consciousness. And we have been for a long time, and we are far from finished. We are really in a struggle between light and darkness. And Jesus and Babaji have been working on it for a long time. And so where we are now, I do not believe is going to end soon. I mean, I'm not a prophet, but every prophet there is, and every economist, and any common sense appraisal, just starting with climate change, it's not going to end soon. So what do we do about that? You see, that's what the issue is. And this is where this thought that I realized I myself was buying in yesterday. Rather than embracing the now, I'm holding on and waiting to be rescued. And this is something I've been through in my life before with circumstances that were far less cosmic and far less global. When Swami Kriyananda assigned me to live in the Palo Alto community and to work with it, which was now since 1987, which is quite a long time ago, in my mind, this I would only be here for a relatively short period of time. Not because I didn't want to be, and in fact, when we moved here, we absolutely cut our ties with everything else. We didn't leave a potholder in any other location, brought everything that we owned, and never referred to Ananda Village for me, which had been my home for 16 years. I never called it home. This was home. Because the only way you can accomplish anything is to devote yourself and commit yourself to where you are. So it wasn't a question that I wasn't committed here, but I expected, which turns out not to be true, that I would help found more than one community, or actually more than two, because I was part of a non-village. So I thought we would start this one, then we would move on and start another, which was fine. I'm that kind of person. I like the idea. One of my friends, Shivani, said when she was working at Ananda Village, by the time they're putting in sidewalks at Ananda Village, she said, I hope to be plowing up the desert somewhere else, meaning she's a Brahma type. She wants to be creating things, making things happen. And she did. She got to go to Europe. She's been in Europe now for 30 years, but she's traveled all over the world helping start. But what was interesting to me, after about 7, 10, maybe, I don't know how many years it was, maybe it was about 10, there was this idea that we would be pulled out of here and we would go to the East Coast and we'd work on the East Coast. And that idea actually got quite a lot of traction. But then it didn't work. The replacements didn't work and so on. And Swami just said to me, I think you should think in terms of this is the rest of your life. So when he suddenly said, this is the rest of my life, what was fascinating to me was how many things that were just below the conscious level I'd been waiting to be rescued from. And I didn't even know it because I was just going along. But many aspects, people I didn't know how to get along with, aspects of the project I didn't know how to solve, literally a corner of the garden where I couldn't make anything grow. I would just think, well, I don't have to because I'm going to get to walk away from it. And I saw, like, that's just a bathtub with the plug pulled out and you're pouring water in from the top, but it's draining out the bottom at the same time because it's always, I don't have to deal with that. I'm going to be rescued. But God realization is the exact opposite of that. God realization is the infinite now, complete acceptance, what comes of itself, let it come. Everything is from God, and God's power is limitless, and as I am made in his image, I too have the power to overcome all obstacles. One of my favorite affirmations. So any part of us that thinks that I can do this because it's going to end tomorrow is we're denying the opportunity to learn what we're supposed to learn. We're also, in a certain extent, part of the problem because we're just not looking at what's happening. We're not willing to commit ourselves to being fully present in what God has given us and be inspired, therefore, to do what is really appropriate because, and here's the key word, I am not afraid. When we were involved in 12 years of litigation, especially when we were involved in the second lawsuit, which took place in this area, and therefore it took place in the living room of the apartments where we were living, because Swamiji and everyone stayed in those apartments for weeks, every morning, and everything went awful in that litigation. And in the end, we were judged morally reprehensible, which was absolutely meaningless because we aren't. But nonetheless, that's what happened. Swamiji himself said, the law of averages says that at least a few things will go in your favor. And when everything goes wrong, you know that Divine Mother is behind it. And that was pretty much the story of that litigation, suffice to say that. Every morning at breakfast, Swami would sit down and say, well, I think today is going to be the positive turning point. I think today is the day when juror number 8, who I can see is wavering, is really going to get it. I think today is the day when the judge is going to decide when our lawyer, who was not representing us well, is going to do this and this. And I kid you not, there were like 10 or 12 people at the breakfast table. We would all say, no, 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 today's going to be another horrible day, just like yesterday. Every day. I mean, I'm exaggerating, but only just that much. Swami would come in with this positive expectation, and we would promise him that he was delusional. And then he would go silent. On like the last day, or the next to the last day, what should have occurred to me way earlier occurred to me. And for those of you who are at that breakfast table, maybe I'm only talking about myself. Maybe some of you really just went with Swami, but that's how it felt to me. I realized, for heaven's sake, Sasha, he's trying to get a spark of positive energy going, and you're just shooting him in the head every time he tries. So the next time he sat down and said, today's the day when it all goes well, I said, sure, today's the day. And again, this is how I remember it. Everybody looked at me like, are you out of your mind? You know, have you been drinking the same coffee he's been drinking? It's like, what is with you? And of course, everything went terrible on the level of that. It just did. Now, Swami's not stupid. He knew better than any of the rest of us what was going on in there. He predicted the disaster when all the rest of us were still living in the sunny world of La-La. He knew what was going on. We underestimated the threat because the charges were so preposterous, but Swami knew human nature better than we did. So much later, I was talking to him, and I just recorded, presented to him exactly what I just said to you. And I said, but for my reason, part of the reason I would react is because all through 12 years of litigation, people were always kind of trying to shine on that everything would be okay. And I said, I don't think they were being positive. I think they were afraid. And there was good reason to be afraid. And I said, so for that reason, I become intensely factual because I don't want to be a coward. I want to be realistic and not need to tell myself a story. And Swami just smiled so sweetly. Yes, he said, it's very subtle. It's very subtle. Because the power of the positive as a conscious tool for bringing light into a situation and for bringing the right magnetism into the situation is quite different than being afraid that things might not turn out the way you want, which is part of the waiting to be rescued. And I said, Swamiji, I'd rather be factual than be cowardly. He said, yes. Again, he said, it's very subtle. But he also understood that the flow of energy is everything and putting out this positive affirmation. But Swami was attached only to God's will. He wasn't operating from likes and dislikes. He was just realizing that everything ends. Everything will end in God's light anyway. But it's subtle. Now, all that I'm trying to say here is, let us pay attention. Let us pay attention to whether actually being really objective or whether we have very deep subconscious motives that are changing this. Here's an interesting story that I remember. This woman became very ill with very serious cancer, and they needed to do the most invasive kind of treatments to prolong her life, what to speak of saving it, which eventually she accepted and prolonged her life for many years, but eventually the cancer took her life away. But at a certain point, she came to Swami and she said that she was going to heal herself by natural methods. And Swami didn't dispute, but he just looked at her and he said, do you have the concentration and willpower to do that? No, sir, she said. Because it wasn't a question of whether it was theoretically possible. It was a question of whether she could pull the energy from the infant to do it. See, that's why Swami could say, today is a positive day. Because it was a positive day. Nothing that he said was going to happen happened. But it was still a positive day. Because we're all children of God. We're doing what we need to do. And we're in the now. We're not waiting to be rescued. We're not going to feel better after this is over. You know, we have just accepted it. Here's another extremely interesting story that I read. There was a Chinese man who had been a dissident in mainland China and had served many years in prison. And then he was a high-profile person, so he was ransomed out, came to the U.S. He had a wife. I believe he met her after he was out of prison and married her here. For reasons unknown, he went back to mainland China. This is an event that happened within the last decade or so, maybe longer. He went back to mainland China for some reason and was arrested and put in prison again. And he was in prison for months or a year, but again, he was too high profile. And so eventually he was ransomed out and came back to California. When he arrived back and was reunited with his wife, he said he proposed to her again and insisted that they have another wedding ceremony. He said because he'd been in prison before and he knew the only way to survive in prison was to forget that there was any other option. And he had so completely repudiated the life that he'd had before that he honestly felt he had to remarry his wife because he had repudiated her as his wife because he could not survive if he was in that situation and in another situation. Now that's and I've never forgotten that. That was so powerful and so stark. Now, fortunately, for most of us, the restrictions that are on us are not like being in a Chinese prison or the Holocaust prison or, God knows, there's a lot of them, the gulags somewhere, you know. But nonetheless, we are in conditions that we want to have different, that we would prefer to have different, but we cannot base our present happiness on the idea that this is a short-term problem and when it goes away, I'll feel better again. It's like now. Someone was explaining recently perfectly, if you expect to feel better in the future will be now. And if you do not have a habit of being happy in the now, you won't be happy then either, because you'll still be thinking of a time other than this one. Sometimes difficult situations go on for a very long time. My friend, her father was, her older sister was a baby when her father was sent to Europe in World War II. Her older sister was 5 when her father saw her again. That's a long time. And history is full of situations like this. We just don't always, it's not always easy. We have forced Divine Mother to come into the room. Now, I'm not trying to be negative because quite frankly, I haven't the foggiest idea what's going to happen. But I was amazed to hear myself talking as if I did. And that's what really touched me. I'm suddenly becoming an authority on things I know nothing about, and my reasons for doing it are too transparent. I'm a coward, just like Swami was saying. And I don't like being a coward. I don't think that's helpful because fear confuses everything. I had a friend, but at that time, she was a Swami and she was working with another ashram. She has a different guru. And she did not have a home. She only traveled. She just traveled and would do teaching stints throughout the world in their ashrams. She had a suitcase, not a very large one. That was it. That was her life. I said, how do you do this? She said, wherever I am, I just imagine I will be there forever. She said, even if it's just in a taxi cab going from one place to the next. And I thought, my goodness, isn't that a wonderful practice? And in the subject that I've been talking about, the Naya Swami order, the original order required that a Swami move every 3 days. So wherever I am, this is who I am, and this is where I may be for the rest of my life. So let me not wait to be rescued. Let me put forward as much energy as I can in this moment as if this is the only life I will ever have. If this is the only life I will ever have, how would I behave? And then even if it isn't, why would I hold back now? These are very good questions and questions worth asking. And Babaji and Christ for our line of masters are working on overcoming all that we see happening now. And, you know, the pandemic is the result of bad thinking. It's not that the pandemic is causing it, although it's exacerbating it. It's the result of all of these aberrations that have set in place, the demonstrations that have been happening these weeks, the abuses that have been exposed. All of this has been here. It's just we've forced Divine Mother to come into the room and she's just ripping the cover off one thing after another. And if we think that all of that's just going to go back in the box and we're just going to go on with life as normal without having to face all of that coming up and have the courage to do the needful, I think we are guilty of wishful thinking. And if we think we can just ignore this, take off our masks and not fall into COVID consciousness, as it was expressed to me recently, well, do you have the concentration and willpower to actually transcend your physical body and this massive thought form? Wishful thinking is not positive thinking. It's very important because wishful thinking is based on a conscious or a subconscious likes or dislikes, which is based on fear. Positive thinking is the courageous attunement with the divine that says, well, it comes of itself, let it come. I am your child. I know that God's power is infinite, and as I am made in his image, I too have the strength to overcome all obstacles. Then what does it matter? Oh, certainly we can be comfortable and uncomfortable. We can have preferences and not preferences. But what do we really want? Do we want to be comfortable? Do we want to be rescued? Or do we want to be free? Do we want to put an end to sorrow? Do we want to truly help our brothers and sisters in God? Truly help liberate this world from suicidal wars and race hatreds and religious sectarianism? Do we want to really rise in attunement to God and fearlessly play our parts? Whether we never have to come out of our house, but as we individually overcome everything that limits us, we become warriors for the light. And that's what we're being called to. And I myself was trying to take off my uniform and fold up my weapons because I'm tired of it. I want it to be over. I'm hoping to be rescued. But I don't think we will be. I mean, even if we can come out of our shelters, I don't think this is over. And I think it behooves us all to strengthen our commitment to divine realization and to living in the light. In the community, we've been facing a certain difficult situation, and those of us who have responsibility for it, it's kind of a joke, but it's fun. We've all said to each other, each one of us needs to really think carefully what Divine Mother is trying to teach each of us, and we need to get really busy and learn those lessons, because until we learn them, we're going to be trapped in this karmic cycle. Well, that's exactly what's going on here. Each one of us, within the privacy of our own heart, in our relationship to God, needs to become very courageous and very honest and very attuned and very prayerful. Lord, make me an instrument of thy light. And whatever it is that's keeping me from that light, give me the strength, the wisdom, and the courage to overcome it. God bless you.